Welcome into another episode of the Joey Morales Show. Back again 1 week later with my dear friend Eric Stairs. How's it going, man?
Oh, just thrilled to be here on a Friday. Hopefully I get all of the division names correct this week.
Yeah, that'd be ideal. So we're here to talk week one reactions, overreactions, week two picks, spread picks, biggest takeaways. So let's go ahead and get right into it, Eric. I think the theme of week one was that a lot of teams really just did not look like their normal selves. The Bills, the Bengals, the Chiefs all lost. Those are three of the top five or six favorites to win the Super Bowl. And, you know, at least the Chiefs had the Travis Kelce injury, but the Bengals and the Bills have far less excuses. There was some weather in the Bengals game. But the Bills, I mean, that was, we can maybe start there. What do you think? What do you think of Josh Allen through this point? And do you have any big, we'll just start with takeaways after week one.
Sure. So to address Josh Allen, I don't have a ton of issue with that performance. I think that we saw it clear as day last year. The Jets have a really good defense. And, you know, you mentioned Mahomes losing, Burrow losing, Allen losing. None of those guys played in the preseason. So I think that you're likely to see some shaky performances from those guys to start the year. And it seems like the kind of league parity gets, like, the difference between the worst teams and the best teams gets closer each year. And so I'm not going to overreact to Allen throwing, what, two interceptions? He had four turnovers. I think that happens, and Allen's in a great spot this week against the Raiders. If he struggles again this week, then I will actually be concerned about Allen. But for now, I'm willing to chalk that one up to just bad luck.
I think it's a bit concerning. I mean, it's maybe less so the turnovers and more so just the decision making. I mean, the second Aaron Rodgers goes down, this game should have significantly changed for the Bills and their approach and their strategy on offense. I just felt like he pushed the ball a lot, but kind of extend it just to look at the Bills, you know, further. I mean, outside of Diggs, I mean, there's just not a lot of dudes on this team that really seem like they can perform really well. And I agree with you, the Jets defense is really good, but yeah, these guys got to turn it around. James Cook, 3.8 yards a carry. Gabe Davis, just two receptions for 32 yards. I mean, Diggs can only really shoulder so much of the workload here. This team needs to turn it around quickly, I would say. And yeah, if they flop against the Raiders, I think some big question marks are going to start coming up.
Any of it can be attributed to the fact that the Bills went with the two tight end sets more than they did last season. Maybe that's a little bit of a different look for Allen.
I mean, without it, right, who are they starting in that, like, third receiver slot? It's like Isaiah McKenzie.
He's gone.
Right? So it's like, you know, yeah, well, I'm just saying, like, you know, last year it's like, who would you rather have, Isaiah McKenzie or Dalton Kincaid on the field? Like, I don't know, I feel like that best, that's a wash. So, I mean, that could have been it. I think also it was a bad spot, you know, 9/11 game, Monday night, that crowd was wild. Especially, you know, after them, especially after the Jets were able to get a couple takeaways and, you know, eventually take the lead. But I still think, you know, they need to show up for sure this week. Moving on, any takeaways from week one that you think are legitimate?
My biggest takeaway, and as soon as you said that we were going to do this segment, I knew exactly what I was going to look into. I'm going to say it now. Desmond Ridder is not him. I think that the Falcons are going to pick a quarterback in next year's draft, or they're going to make a move to get a quarterback during the offseason that is more of a franchise guy. So we saw them pick Bijan Robinson first round. You know, we know that in the NFL these days, it's probably not a wise decision to take a running back so high, but they did. And it makes sense whenever you consider the fact that they're really just trying to surround him with weapons that basically make it so he never has to throw the ball downfield. He completed 15 passes for 115 yards. They ran the ball 26 times. They threw the ball 18 times. I think that Arthur Smith knows that Desmond Ridder is not very good, and they're doing everything that they can to essentially take the outcome of the game out of his hands. So
yeah, pains me agree with all that. But the only thing I'd really add is that, I mean, I will say he was very efficient when he did throw. I mean, 15 for 18, sure. That is what you like to see. The bull case would be maybe that, you know, he just didn't feel like they needed to throw a ton in this game. Probably just maybe just trying to soak up as much just win equity by just keeping the ball in his talented running back hands. But I'm with you. I mean, if they really want to do anything in this league, like, you got to throw the ball eventually. I mean, you're not doing Desmond Ridder any favors by protecting him in the long run. I mean, that's great if you want to maybe win 8-9 games, go to the playoffs, but you want to compete, you want to do anything notable, you need to be able to throw it. Moving on, let's talk about a game that I thought was kind of interesting. And that's actually the season opener, the Lions at the Chiefs. I actually thought that the Lions looked kind of fairly unimpressive in that victory. David Montgomery, I'd say, was very inefficient with his carries. I felt like Josh Reynolds made a pretty big play, but outside of that, like, the secondary receivers on the Lions really just kind of didn't look very good. Josh Reynolds had, a 33-yard catch, but, like, for most of the game, I mean, you know, a lot of these guys were just not getting separation. And this Chiefs defense, even without Chris Jones, looked pretty good. And Mahomes had a ton of time to throw, too. I think if Tony even caught like one of those passes, they probably win this game. But that's my takeaway from the Chiefs. And part of the reason I've been a little down on them this whole year is you can just really see how much they are dependent on Travis Kelce being there. And even if the drops clean up, they probably win that game. But still, I'm mostly talking about just to, as far as their Super Bowl future. I have some question marks when they go up against some of these legitimate defenses, how exactly they're going to be able to move the ball. And, if Kelce is ever out for an extended period of time, this could really be an issue for them.
The good news is that Travis Kelce's, that was his first game that he missed because of injury since his rookie year. So, fingers crossed, as a huge Travis Kelce guy, I hope that doesn't happen. But history says that even whenever he does get banged up a little bit, he's more than capable of going out there and producing. And, of course, they just re-signed Jones to the one-year deal. So I think that we'll see a team that's a little bit more explosive on both sides of the ball this week.
Yep, totally agree. And speaking of their opponent this week, Jaguars, Colts, I thought that the Jags defense really kind of laid an egg, so to speak. I mean, they get on, the Colts put up 20 points. But when you really look at it, Richardson steps out hurt after he gets like a first down at the 3-yard line, in the final 2 minutes, easily could have ran that in if he was healthy. I kind of count that almost as a near touchdown. Jags would have given up 28 points to a rookie quarterback in his debut. Not a good sign at all. Now that Kelce's back, do expect the Chiefs to put up plenty of points this week. But I did think that Calvin Ridley looked like his old self, looked fantastic. At least on offense, I think the Jags should be more than fine. Their defense is going to be exploited, I would say, when they go up against other teams with maybe more experienced passers.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add on that. I didn't get to spend a ton of time on that game, but I'm happy for Anthony Richardson. Anytime that we can get a young quarterback in that shows promise in his first game, it just makes the league that much more fun. So I'm looking forward to watching him this week.
Last game, I kind of wanted to recap and get your thoughts on before we move into our next segment, is Dolphins at Chargers. Dolphins come away with a 2-point victory here due to a missed extra point, but I think the theme for this game was that the Chargers' defense has just been horrible. Now, in back-to-back games, pretty disappointing to see them show up that way, especially coming off of that gut-wrenching playoff loss to the Jaguars. You know, Brandon Staley, defensive-minded head coach, got to say, I think this team is going to have some big question marks if they don't turn it around soon.
I'm not particularly worried about the Chargers. I think that those are actually two really similar teams in the way that the offense operates, at least the passing game. But no, I don't have anything to add on that game.
Okay, let's go ahead and move on to our next segment then, our fraud alert. It's going to be a weekly segment where we pick a team kind of near the top in terms of Super Bowl odds that we think are straight up frauds. Eric, I'll let you go first. Who you got?
Well, I'll tell you what, this team is is not near the top of the Super Bowl odds list, but I think that it had their performance in week one, I think, had people questioning their season outlook. So it's the Bucks, and obviously I was high on Minnesota. I expected Minnesota to blow them out, and I think a lot of people did. So I think that there's a lot of things that point toward the Bucks not being very good still. I think that people saw them beat the Vikings and thought to themselves, maybe this team isn't as bad as we think. And then they get this opportunity to play the Bears in week two. As we know, they looked terrible in week one against the Packers. So I think people are asking themselves, can the Bucks go 2-0? If they go 2-0, what does that mean for their ability to win the NFC South, which, as we know, completely wide open. But, you know, just let's think about a few things that happened. So they still gave up 329 yards in the air to Kirk Cousins. And, you know, no hate on Kirk Cousins. He looked good again last night in terms of efficiency, but couldn't get the win. So I'm still skeptical about this statement of Baker Mayfield figuring out the Vikings' defensive signal calling. He was able to basically tell what kind of coverage they were going to be in, and that's not going to happen every week. You know, cheers to Baker Mayfield for figuring that out. But I think that that also played into the Bucs' ability to win that game. Furthermore, Baker, 34 pass attempts, 173 yards. He completed 21 of those. Again, those are mediocre numbers despite the fact that he did have two touchdowns. And then Kirk Cousins fumbled the ball two times in the first quarter. It only led to 3 points for the Bucs, but changes like that definitely impact the outcome of the game. So I think that the Bucs still suck regardless, and I expect them to get beat by the Bears on Sunday.
Yeah, I thought interesting statements that he knew the signals. I mean, they scored 10 points in the second half. Like, I mean, they scored 10 in the first half, 10 in the second half. So I was a little skeptical of that myself. Do agree there. I especially after a potential win against the Bears, you know, this could be one of the more nasty 2-0 teams in the league. I'm going to go way up for to the top and pick a team that I think really could have some concerns on it, especially on one side of the ball, and that is the Philadelphia Eagles. Week one, Mac Jones, they gave up 316 yards. Week two, Kirk Cousins, 364 passing yards. This is a team that I think is vastly different on the defensive side of the ball than they were last season. They are already racking numerous injuries up on the defensive side of the ball. N'Kobe Dean on IR, Sean Bradley already on IR, James Bradbury looking like he might be done for the season, Reed Blankenship out, Avante Maddox, I think, also could be done for the season. So, you know, this is a team I believe I last checked is the second biggest favorite to win the Super Bowl. I thought Jalen Hurts last night, outside of a couple deep shots, really just did not look like his normal, like his MVP, you know, caliber self, if you will. And, you know, if this team really wants to get back to the Super Bowl, win this time, they're going to need him to be able to be an effective passer, and they're going to need to be able to make some stops on defense. What I will say, though, is that if DeAndre Swift can continue this sort of production, that really can kind of help them quite a bit. But certainly, I think, especially after last night, I would not be taking them at their current price tag to win the Super Bowl.
What are they listed at right now?
The last I checked, they were plus 650. I could get some. Let me get some updated odds on that while we're waiting. Eric, you want to give your thoughts on any of that?
No, I was going to bring up DeAndre Swift too. And again, I think it's completely reasonable to I think it's reasonable that the Eagles defense played poorly just because of those injuries. Like, what are you going to expect? N'Kobe Dean's the play caller. James Bradbury is James Bradbury. We all know what he can do. He's been one of the dominant forces on that side of the ball over the last 5 or 6 seasons. So it's not surprising that they're not playing as well. And again, I think that these days it takes a while for these players to hit their stride. And I'm willing to kind of reserve judgment on players like Jalen Hurts, again, like I did with Josh Allen, until maybe week 3, 4. If we're still seeing issues, then I think we can officially overreact. But hey, Eagles 2-0. They beat two teams that definitely aren't bottom feeders. Bill Belichick's teams in Foxborough are always going to be tough, and the Vikings are in the fat part of the bell curve, I think, still at this point. So 2-0, it's a good start to the season, and I'm sure that they're thrilled. So I would still be shocked if they didn't end up in the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, you know, back-to-back games where they failed, or I guess they did barely cover the spread against the Patriots. But, I mean, yeah, Patriots had the ball, what, at their, like, 20-something yard line, you know, before the end of the game. And the Vikings put up 28 points with 4 fumbles. One of those literally happened at the 1-inch line with Justin Jefferson. Yeah, I mean, I hear you. Maybe those teams can, maybe those players could eventually gel and mesh, and they can get some better production out of them going forward. But certainly, if I had to pick someone at the top of the board to that I think could not be worth those odds, it's the Eagles to me. But we'll keep an eye on them. All right, Eric, any other takeaways from the games that we have seen thus far before we kind of take a look at week 2? Outside of Thursday night, obviously.
I think that Tyreek Hill might be better than Justin Jefferson, but I think that we've put Jefferson on a pedestal over the last year or so, but Tyreek Hill looks terrifying out there. But that's it. I just kind of wanted to mention that I'm questioning Jefferson's stranglehold on the number one receiver spot in the league.
Yeah, I mean, Tyreek looked great. Only thing I would really add is he had a couple of catches that I would say, like, if you had to use that, like, next-gen stats, like, probability or whatever, like, it had to have been no more than, like, 20% chance that he comes down with some of those catches. But he's Tyreek Hill. He's great. I won't fight you too much on that. All I would say is that I just think Justin Jefferson has just a bit more in his tool bag than Tyreek Hill does. But Tyreek Hill is is very, you know, good at one particular spot I would say is certainly better than Justin Jefferson, at least perhaps when it comes to the deep ball. But won't fight you too much on that. Okay, looking at week 2, Eric, a lot of good games, I would say, on the board. You got Bengals trying to bounce back off the mat against the Ravens at home. Bills also trying to bounce back at home against the Raiders. You got a very close spread, Packers at Falcons. Anything you like so far for week 2?
Every time I go and I look at lines, I'm frustrated about how accurate they are. I mentioned this earlier. I fully expect the Bears to cover. I'm gonna lay the money line for the Bears. They're at +3 last time I looked. The money line was at +130. Teams that get blown out at home and then go on the road the next week usually cover the spread. So I'm going to be laying that. I think that they're going to focus a little bit more on DJ Moore this week. I think they're going to let Justin Fields run around a little bit more and use his legs. Hopefully Chase Claypool is not on the field. And anytime that happens, then your team gets better. He was embarrassing in week one. I hope they cut him, frankly. I'm perplexed by the Ravens and Bengals game. I want to take the Ravens. Do you see this line moving depending on what happens with Mark Andrews?
So I think actually that it'll move the other way as the weekend goes on. I just think that you have to nearly throw away that game one in the weather. One thing I didn't realize is that Joe Burrow came out in the second half with like two gloves. So clearly grip strength and, just the slipperiness of the ball was definitely an issue. You add in the fact that he kind of missed so much of training camp with his calf injury. Maybe that's still lingering, but as far as, the public is concerned, he's not even on the injury report anymore. So, I think we should expect that to be pretty much healed. And so, you look at this Bengals team -3, I really think this is a pretty fair spread. I could see it maybe getting closer to 3.5 before I see it coming down to 2.5. Just the Ravens, even if they get Andrews back, not a lot of production they got from the receivers outside of Zay Flowers. I think that the Bengals can really move the ball on offense, especially against this Ravens defense. So I kind of like the Bengals -3. I actually have already bet that spread myself. But if it got to 3.5, I could see grabbing the Ravens at that price point, just with the hook.
My book shows that it's about to move to 2.5.
I mean, I think if it does, and that has to be for Andrews, but I would buy the Bengals at 2.5 if that's the case.
Yeah.
I just think that they're going to show up in a big way here. And, the Ravens offense, especially with this new offensive coordinator, could take some time to really settle in. And yeah. I would note, it's a little concerning that, does the offensive game plan really change that much with Andrews versus Likely in there? Because
Andrews just better.
I hear that he's better. I'm just saying, it didn't seem like, before with the Greg Roman offense, tight ends were, a heavy part of the game plan. Didn't look like that early on in week one or thus far. So at 2.5, I would buy the Bengals. At 3, I'd buy the Bengals. 3.5, I could see a merit for the Ravens. But that's kind of my lean with that team, especially at home opener. I think my favorite bet of the week that I have personally bet is the Chiefs. I got this at 2.5 before I think Kelsey started tracking upwards. At 3.5, I actually don't mind it that much as well. I think I could even see this getting to 4. I just think when you look at the what the Jaguars allowed the Colts to do on offense, it was a bit concerning. You think about all those drops that the Chiefs had last week, and if they can clean all that stuff up, they had extra time to repair. I just think that the Chiefs more than likely beat them by 6 in a lot of these matchups. I would take them all the way out to maybe like 4.5 or so, I think, is when you start to question it.
So playoff game on the road for the Jags last year. What'd they lose by? 7?
I could go pull that game up. That was
game. No Calvin Ridley. Obviously the weather was different, but I'm wondering how much how much is Calvin Ridley plus Bean at home worth? Is it 3.5 points?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean most receivers are maybe worth like a half point at best, if anything. That's why I kind of think like, I mean, so you basically go from what, like 6.5 to 3.5 just from going from the Chiefs to Jackson, or from Kansas City to Jacksonville. Seems about right to me. I mean, my whole take too is that I think that the Chiefs are going to probably make some sort of adjustments at the receiver position. You got to imagine that they get Rice more involved. You know, I'm sure Tony will play much better this
yeah,
week.
Yeah, for sure.
And would not be surprised if Kelce ends up with like an absurd target share as well.
Do we know if he's going to be on a limited snap count?
I have not seen any reporting on that, so I would, you know, I would say it's a worse assumption to assume that he is on a snap count than not,
right?
Just based off of the reporting. I mean, I think he got a full practice in today, so I think he should be good to go. If I had to make this a 3-pack of picks. Doing a bit of an audible here, Eric. I think the next game I kind of like is this Lions.
Oh yeah,
this game.
That game's gonna be awesome.
Seahawks obviously could be without both of their starting tackles, Jason Peters, 41-year-old, to try to get some depth there. But yeah, I really think the conversation should be centered around the Lions. They win a game that I really feel like they shouldn't have. They did not look overly impressive on either side of the ball, I would say. And I think, you know, the other thing that's kind of on my mind, I think the spread opened as high as 6.5, I believe, for the Lions, all the way down to 4.5 now. What are your thoughts on that game, Eric?
I think it's going to hit the over. That's my number one bet for that game. And if I was going to bet on the spread, I would definitely do the Seahawks. I'm seeing +5 right now. Same thing as last week, or same thing as the Bears. I think that they're going to bounce back after a really, frankly, sorry performance in week one. But, yeah, I think that that both teams are going to be able to move the ball, especially on the ground. So I think Aiden Hutchinson could prove to be a huge issue for Geno Smith as well. We saw Aaron Donald kind of ruffle some feathers in the backfield this past week. I mean, not to compare Aiden Hutchinson to Aaron Donald, but I expect him to be a factor in that game. But nonetheless, I definitely am going to be on the over in that game. Indoors, the Lions home opener, their fans are going to be stoked after their week one win. I expect them to put up some points. But yeah, so for that one, over. And then I guess I'll lean Seattle +5, but I don't think I'm going to play that one.
Seahawks in their first four drives against the Rams, they get the ball down to the Rams 12-yard line, the Rams 10-yard line, the Rams 23-yard line, and the Rams 21-yard line, their very first four drives of the game. Only come away with 10 points, and then the second half was obviously very bad. I believe they only had 13 offensive plays in the second half. That's pretty bad. So I think that's also maybe a bit of an overreaction, you know, but maybe that is because of the injuries. Maybe that just played a bigger role down the stretch of that game, but you know, they really looked pretty good in the first half. Did have a missed field goal, a chip shot, I would say, 39-yard field goal too. So I think that the Seahawks, at least in the first half of that Rams game, moved the ball well. Perhaps that is why the spread came down as much as it did, but I kind of agree with you. I do like Seattle on the spread, and I do like the over here in that game. Last and final pick I will make – or actually, Eric, do you have a second pick on deck?
I definitely lean Buff -8. I hate, like, the -8 feels kind of like a yucky number. But whenever the Bills win, they win big. I think that it's like out of like 60% of Josh Allen's wins for the Bills have, as a starter, have been by a touchdown or more. And I think that the Bills are going to kind of exercise some demons from the week before. And this is just a good spot for them to get right. I know that that's a cliche, but I think that they're going to do everything that they can to really just pummel the Raiders this week. I don't think there's any other game plan other than score as much as you can score early and often. And you know, we saw that they didn't run the ball effectively, so I expect Allen to be hucking the ball the whole time. I think the Bills are going to win by 15 points.
Yeah, I like that as well. I got to imagine Bills, 49ers, Cowboys. Three-team money line parlay pays out pretty much even money. Got to imagine that'll be pretty popular this week.
Wait, what did you just say?
Bills, 49ers, Cowboys, yes. Money line on all three.
I just did a teaser on those three. It's plus 150 if you tease all of them 6 points. Cowboys to 2.5, San Francisco basically to money line, and Buffalo down to minus 2. That's funny. I placed that on, I guess, just yesterday afternoon. So,
yeah, I just got to imagine, that's going to be a very popular teaser. And, you know, just to speak briefly on that 49ers-Rams game, I might be dead wrong on Brock Purdy. I think, Eric, and the 49ers look solid, man. And they have historically dominated the Rams. And it may say that it's in Los Angeles, but there's going to be a lot of red jerseys there.
Yeah, for sure.
Puka Nacua, Stafford's favorite target from week one, has an oblique injury. Looks like he's going to play, but maybe that hampers him. This 49ers front could maul the Rams this week.
No, I agree. The Niners and the Cowboys were like the only teams that actually looked as good as people expected them to look.
Yeah, I would agree with that. They were really the two biggest favorites, the Super Bowl favorites that really showed up in a big way in week one. Last pick I will give is the Houston Texans minus one. This is a very close spread. But I think a large part of it is just what we saw from the Colts in week one. Anthony Richardson looked fairly competent, but I think that could be a little bit different this week. This Houston Texans defense is, I think, pretty solid and could end up being, when it's all said and done, a top, like a top five, top six, seven unit in the league. Held the Ravens, I would say, pretty decently in the first half of this game. Did get it kind of away from them in the second half, but I, especially on the Colts side of things, you know, Anthony Richardson was able to move the ball through the air as well. And I just think that the Texans cornerbacks are a little bit better than what the Jaguars are able to do. I also think that the Texans defensive line is much better than the Jags. And if you look at the Texans side of things on their side of the ball for offense, the Colts secondary is horrible. And I think C.J. Stroud could not have a huge game, but, you know, be able to throw for 275 or so in this matchup. I kind of like Nico Collins to have a pretty big game in this one. And at a tight spread, you're asking me, you know, just essentially a pick 'em. I like the Texans here, home opener with the new rookie. Maybe that crowd finally, you know, has some sort of life and hope. Any thoughts there on the two rookies going up against each other, Eric?
No. I mean, I would lean Colts, but I haven't done an extensive amount of research on that game. So are you saying that we should do CJ Stroud over 216 passing yards?
I actually bet. I hit a couple overs on him early in the week. I think he had it originally at 190, bet the over on that. This Colts secondary is bad. I think C.J. Stroud actually looked not bad and, you know, could have been worse in his week one spot going on the road at Baltimore as like a 10-point underdog. I think could have been way worse than what it was. Now he gets a home matchup, basically the worst secondary in the league. I think a lot of people are seeing, you know, remembering what they saw last week with Anthony Richardson against the Jags. I think this is going to be a much more difficult matchup. And dude, I mean, the Colts have nobody. I mean, Deion Jackson looked horrible. Hopefully they can get Zach Moss back, but and I think he is going to be good to play, but you know,
they Michael just don't. Michael Pittman looked good.
He's okay, but I think that I just think that the Colts are really going to get stifled here, and would expect them to struggle. So yeah, that's my last bet. Anything else? Any other bets, Eric, before we wrap up here?
I like the Chargers -2.5 there against the Titans. More because I hate the Titans. I meant to say it during the takeaways early in the episode. I don't think that Ryan Tannehill finishes the season. I think that he'll be released or traded for chump change to say the Jets as a backup or something. So I'm going to trust the Chargers to bounce back. I know that the Titans defense isn't terrible, but I think that their offense is. We saw Derrick Henry's snaps were reduced to below 50%. And if he's not on the field, then how are they going to move the ball? So, I definitely like the Chargers there at that 2.5. That one looks like it's probably going to move to 3 as well.
Yeah, I got 3 at the current book I'm looking at. But, yeah, I don't disagree with any of that as well. Chargers, I have to imagine, will be playing with increased attention and focus going into this week. All right, I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up, Eric. We will be back maybe next week. We'll see if we can get hopefully a third guest in for this pod. But yeah, if you like what you heard, give us a follow, give us a subscription, and we'll catch you later, folks.